Welcome to the World of Intelligence, a podcast for you to discover the latest analysis of global military and security trends within the open source defense intelligence community. Now onto the episode with your host, Harry Kemsley.
Hello, and welcome to this edition of Jane's World of Intelligence. Your host, Harry Kemsley, and as usual, my co-host, Sean Corbett. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Harry.
Hi. Now, we've spoken about activities in and around Taiwan before, but quite recently we had a, I think, very insightful report, special report written by one of our colleagues here at Jane's, who I'll introduce shortly, about the activities, I think unusual amount of activity, actually, around Taiwan. And I thought it'd be a really good idea to get the author of that report in, one of our journalists, Akhil Dadidel. Hello, Akhil.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show.
Not at all. Thank you for taking the time. And thank you as well for the report. For the listeners who are interested, we'll try and get a link to the report added to the podcast, the podcast access that you've created, because I think it's a very, very insightful report to what it is we've been seeing and what it might mean. So, Akhil, if I can, just for the audience that don't get a chance to read your excellent report, could you, first of all, just give us a summary of what it is that you've seen and why that might be important?
Yeah. From 2024, China began to escalate the scale of its military aircraft incursions into China's, into Taiwan's air defense identification zone, which is an airspace set up to identify and monitor foreign aircraft. The data from the Taiwanese MND shows that China set a new record, essentially, for the number of incursions in 2024, significantly from May onwards when the new Taiwanese president took office. So the ultimate, what we're seeing as, you know, this kind of incursions being the sign of as escalation of Chinese operational tactics, testing, new strategies for A2AD flights over the Bashi Channel, and other kind of, you know, strategic kind of operations that they're mounting.
So when you say an increase and it was a record, yeah, are we talking about it by a few percentage points, or is it a really significant lift?
50%. That was a 50% compared to previous years. Yeah.
Right. And has there been any difference in the type of activity? So the volume of activity has gone up by 50%, but has there been any specific indications of the kinds of activities? Are we talking about suppression of air defense kind of activity, or have we been talking about support to surface ops kind of activity, or both? What kind of activities have we seen?
Well, this really began in mid-2023, when China began to kind of increase the number of sorties into the ADIS. But what really happened, what we started seeing was more complexity in operations. We started to see in-flight refueders, tagging along with fighters operating over the south of Taiwan. We saw a significant amount of incursions over the median line, which is the de facto border between the two countries. This is the crossings of the median line are part of an effort by China to kind of mitigate the value of the median line, right? Render it meaningless. And they've been doing that, and they've been continuing those kinds of activities for quite some time now. But what we're also seeing is, in the past, we saw China using bombers to traverse around the island, circumnavigate the island. But now we're seeing them using unmanned aerial vehicles to circumnavigate the island. And they're doing this to test also Taiwan's reaction. How is Taiwan monitoring PLA activities on the West Coast? How is it doing it on the East Coast? And also we are seeing China kind of operating over the Bashi Channel and over the Western Pacific. And again, we have these UAVs loitering in the area, kind of monitoring how Taiwan is reacting to these kinds of activities. So there's increasing complexity in the operations.
Is there any reciprocal flights of this type from Taiwan towards China at all? Or is it entirely from China towards Taiwan?
One of the things that Taiwan quickly discovered, the Chinese have been operating aircraft in the ADIS since the late 90s. So Taiwan has increasingly found that it's very expensive to kind of react to every single sortie. It's super expensive, in fact. There was once a Taiwan MND report that said that, the F-16 per hour operating cost was $9,800. So in 2021, Taiwan decided that it's not going to intercept every single aircraft that the Chinese send over, right? They're going to use a ground-based radar to monitor these activities. So what we're seeing, Taiwan is not reacting to every single incursion, and they don't have to at the end of the day. All they want to do is monitor these aircraft.
Right, right. So Sean, I'm curious. We're seeing this massive upturn in activity. What do you think people are saying in the headquarters that you've spent time in about that? Are they seeing that as significant? Are they thinking about that as a potential precursor to any future work?
So I think the detailed analysis will become, it's not just about the numbers, it's about complexity. So if they're exercising, you know, Kameo, so composite air operations, where, as Arkil said, you know, if you've got refueling, if you've got the enablers, if you've got EW, all that sort of support, then that becomes more of a consolidated dress rehearsal for something that might come later. But equally, if they are combining with naval activity and to an extent ground-based air defense activity, then it really leads into their modernization assertions where, you know, we're going to get to a place, you know, in a few years, not many years actually, 2027 is the intent, where they've modernized their forces to an extent that they can actually do combined arms operations. And to that extent, they've probably learned quite a lot from the Russian incursion into Ukraine. So we would be very much looking about it, you know, the mantra threat equals capability plus intent plus opportunity. So the capabilities are one thing. So modern aircraft, you know, fifth generation, there's a bit of that going on. Intent is how they are actually using them. So are they developing their tactics, techniques, and procedures? And then the opportunity is right, what the other side doing in terms of allies and all the rest of it, including the Taiwanese. So we'd be looking at it from that perspective, all the way from the strategic, right the way down to the tactical.
Right. And I'm curious, are we seeing it being single service? Is this an Air Force activity, or are there Air Force with Navy, with maybe Marine forces involved?
Air Force with Navy. We've seen PLAF aircraft operating alongside or in the vicinity of carrier-borne aircraft. Also, you know, the plan also operates airborne early warning and control aircraft. And we've seen, you know, evidence that these aircraft are also operating in the south of Taiwan area. So it's combined operations in many ways.
Combined operations, which are by far the most complicated and therefore need to be practiced a great deal.
And also I might add one more thing, you know, which is we're seeing aircraft from other theater commands within China, you know, from Central Theater Command, from Southern Theater Command.
That was my next question. Exactly that. Yeah. Are they doing this from local forces only, or are they actually massing force and bringing it together?
There's evidence to state that,
go ahead, Arkil.
Yeah, I mean, there's evidence to show that, you know, they're bringing in aircraft to forward airfields near the Taiwan Strait to send them across into the AEDAS. And this is all part of an overall familiarization kind of theme that they have. They want to condition multiple units to have familiarity over future operations over the Taiwan Strait and around Taiwan, north, south, and the east coast.
So you've got now multiple units across the Chinese military who are being trained in multi-domain operations,
I guess. Precisely.
And a potential operation in and around Taiwan.
Yeah.
That, I mean, at the risk of sounding a bit simplistic about it, does that not sound like rehearsal to anybody else? I mean, that feels a bit more than posturing, because if you all were trying to do was create a sense of geopolitical statement, you could do that on a much smaller scale, couldn't you? You could do that on a scale that was probably back in 2021, 22, based on what you said, a level of activity that was demonstrating you had intent, but not really, really strong intent. This feels much more positive, much more specific, doesn't it?
Yeah, I feel like there's several aspects to Chinese, you know, the Chinese response and the Chinese activity in the AEDAS. One is, it is intimidatory. Yes, they're trying to intimidate Taiwan because the level of activities rose after, you know, the new president took office in May 20th, 2024. But there's also other aspects to that. You know, there's also, they introduce new aircraft to kind of test them in an operational setting. And a key example of this is their Y-8 Shaanxi, Y-8 and Y-9 special mission aircraft. We're seeing frequent iterations, improved iterations of these aircraft entering service. you know, they, these aircraft are not too numerous in service, maybe one or two aircraft each of each type, but they do appear and around Taiwan, and they're used to for, you know, electronic warfare, testing Taiwan's radar defenses, testing the response time of the ROCAF, which is the Republic of China Air Force, Taiwanese Air Force. So we're seeing whenever Taiwan, whenever China, you know, introduces a new kind of technology, they kind of fly these aircraft into the ADIS to use them in an operational context. Which this includes, by the way, engine technologies as well, you know, improved engines, which is the WS-10.
So they're taking the opportunity to familiarize their air crews, their navies, and they're working them together. They're bringing in forces from around China to ensure that they've all had the same exposure. But they're also trialing, maybe doing test and evaluation, late stage development of platforms as well, and engines, as you just said. Mm-hmm. John, presumably that's good for us, though, isn't it, in terms of intelligence gathering? We get to see how they operate. We get to see how they mass force, what kind of forces tend to operate together, how they operate. I mean, this is also a benefit intelligence value to the Taiwanese.
It is, and it's an absolute balance. You know, so they're not going to want to give everything away, but equally they've got to, in some sort of operational environment, test their command and control is a really big one. So they need to develop their command and control and have been doing that, actually. That's both within, so I understand, but I believe that the land-based naval air force has now been re-subordinated to the air force itself now, which makes coordination better. There's obviously its coordination with their own ground-based air defense systems. So we will learn quite a lot about how they are intended to do business. The unknown would be, okay, how much of that is trying to get us into a position where we're seeing that as the new norm? So, right, we now understand their doctrine, their tactics, their developing tactics, and all the rest of it. So therefore, we can react against it, and they'll do something completely different. Yeah. I mean, it's an easy thing to say, but it's not an easy thing to do, as you know better than anybody, in terms of, you know, when you're exercising, you have to follow specific drills, and it's not as easy as going, right, we're going to do that forever, and then we're going to do something different.
Yeah.
You know, I think the phrase mass still matters.
Yeah.
You know, they've got over 1,200 fourth generation aircraft, fighter aircraft. Yeah. That's huge. Yeah. So they don't necessarily need to be that clever with the tactics. They just need to make sure that they get them right. And we'd be looking at that quite hard, actually, and how the different elements of the force, if indeed they are operating together.
Yeah, quantity has a quality all of its own, as they say. Akhil, I'm fascinated to dig a bit further in terms of the so what of this. But before we do it, let me just step back for a second and think about the how. How did you get to these insights? Because as a journalist, your job is about reporting and giving your reader an understanding of things. But to get there, you've been through a process, to use the T word, to use frequently, the tradecraft of what you do as a data journalist. Could you just, for the audience, give an insight into, so how did you do it? How did you get the information, verify it, before you got to writing what I think is an extremely good report?
You know, Taiwan has been releasing daily bulletins on the ADIS incursions since September 2020. So what I did when I first joined the company 3 years ago, I started a database. I went back and collated every single day from 2020 to 2022 when I first started with the company. And then I kept up the database. And after our military events team took over, I kind of coordinated with them to ensure that the data was up to specs, which was, you know, the number of aircraft, types of aircraft, location of flight, flight path analysis, and also timing. Sometimes they would provide timings, we realized quickly the data showed that China doesn't like operating at night, for example. But now they have, from 2023 on, they decided that they would try to operate from night to a degree. Mm-hmm. All this is official Taiwanese Ministry of National Defense data that they release on their website and on Twitter. China, on the other hand, doesn't release much information about its activities. We get a glimpse sometimes from state-owned media and sometimes their own Ministry of National Defense, Beijing's Ministry of National Defense. They put out numbers, they put out some facts, they put out statements. I'm trying to corroborate the two. Ultimately, what we're doing is we are trusting the Taiwanese that they're giving us the facts. And we assess it based on what we know, what we can cross-reference with our own data that other teams are collecting in such as central events.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of those things, presumably, yeah. is you can also reach out into the other databases available to you in terms of, you know the ORCID, you know the inventories, you know where.
Precisely.
Therefore, you can validate to an extent from that. Yeah. Okay, so having now collated all this information, got this database running and tracking it, is there anything else other than social media or anything else you can use that might help you validate some of the things you're seeing or hearing? Are there other reporters talking about the same things, for example?
Well, you know, covering the Chinese aviation, you get a sense of which aircraft are being produced, which aircraft are being transferred to units. We have Jane's satellite imagery analysis, which kind of helps corroborate the presence of aircraft, specific aircraft at specific air bases. These are all tools that we have been using for several years now to kind of corroborate the information.
Very good. All right, now let's just step back then to the topic of what we're seeing, what we're learning from it. You described very, very, very well in the report what's going on, the differences we've seen in recent times in terms of types of aircraft, types of operations, the complexity and so on, where they're doing it, all of those things that you would need to get a sense of what the new normal looks like. I'll come to you with the same question in a second. What are we learning about the capability of the PLA? What are we finding out about them in their ability? You've mentioned complexity increased. You've mentioned night flying as well. By the way, is a significant step. I can remember that from my own time. What are we learning about them as an organization in terms of their competence, do you think?
What China's been doing is it has been incorporating a significant amount of combat platforms that will help it achieve combined arms in terms of they're building more in-flight refuelers, they're producing more special mission aircraft to support the fighters. We're seeing the fighters traversing a greater distance because this is also due to increased engine efficiency, by the way.
Right.
The production of J-16 4.5 generation fighters has increased in China, and more and more units are replacing their older aircraft with this new kind of 4.5 generation fighter aircraft. We haven't seen any fifth-gen aircraft in the ATIS as far as, but, you know, this could just be that Taiwan is not reporting that because they don't want China to realize that, you know, they could track these aircraft, right?
Right.
In terms of what capabilities we're seeing them able to operate in a more cohesive manner within around Taiwan. We're seeing coordination. To a larger degree. And I also mean coordination with carrier-borne forces, right?
Yeah.
We're also seeing, you know, sometimes transport aircraft operating in the ATIS. This could be for paratroop operation in the future.
Sure. Yeah.
But let me also say that one of the problems that we've had with kind of analyzing the data over the last 12 months is that after the new president, you know, Lai Xingdu came into power, there was a data downgrade in the sense that Taiwan stopped releasing a lot of the information that they were releasing previously. This has caused some constraints, but we can still figure out where the primary areas of operation are. And these are consistent with previous PLA operations across the median line in the southwest area and in the east coast. Which is again reflective of all the things that they want to do, which is they want to control the Baoshi Channel, they want to cut off Taiwan from external help in the future. These are all capability building exercises.
Yeah.
And you know, regarding dress rehearsals, I just want to get back to that for a minute. We can't say with any certainty that China will attack Taiwan at some point in the near future. It may happen eventually. But all these are part of, enhancing their own internal capabilities to kind of condition their units for a future war.
Yeah. Going to the gym, as they say sometimes, get themselves better. So, Sean, I'm curious, without straying across any lines, what kind of things will organizations that you've worked for be seeing that we can't see from an operational perspective?
Well, that's an interesting question. So they'll have a good idea of the electronic environment. So e-links again,
at
a strategic level, which we will never be, or not to the same degree anyway, live to that. In terms of, you know, the intent at the higher military and strategic levels, I don't know. But, China's notoriously difficult intelligence target.
Mm.
So, That's probably as far as I'll go. You know, from an open source perspective, particularly with the Taiwanese sharing so much information, which they're doing for very obvious reasons, and there's no reason to think that they are either making it up or exaggerating, then the sort of, you know, the actual operations themselves, you know, the routes they're taking, how many aircraft are flying one time, that's probably going to be pretty accurate.
I guess, Sean, just touch on that for one step further. When we spoke with Zavi and others from this conversation in the past about indicators and warnings, we've talked about the fact that China-Taiwan have a huge amount of economic relationship. And although these events we've been rightly talking about here are of significance militarily, they don't necessarily become harbingers of an invasion. There's no doubt there's some scope within the activities to suggest they're getting ready or better at being prepared for, but there's nothing in the indicators of warnings we've seen from previous discussions that suggest this is now more likely. This, to your point about capability, improving capability, but it's not necessarily changing intent, right?
Right. It's the imminence that's the issue right now. And they want the options to be able to do it. So, as you mentioned, there's a big difference between capability in terms of numbers and equipment and how you use it, which is why it's so interesting what's happening right now. We relearned it the hard way with Ukraine. You know, just looking at the numbers of T-72 tanks and all the rest of it does not necessarily mean that they are going to take Kyiv, in this case, in 3 days.
Yeah.
And the same is true here. But what I think is happening is that the Chinese recognize that. So they are making sure that they have got the actual capability, both in terms of the tactics, the experience, and the other things. But back to your IMW piece, and this is as important, but it's only one element of it. And this is where you've got to take the whole thing holistically. In a different conversation earlier, we were talking about the new landing craft docks that have just been developed. You know, they're pretty specific. You're doing that for a reason. You're not going to do that just to message. So you bring all that in, and then at the more strategic level, you look at the intent, what is going to be a response potentially by the US, has that changed? You know, so they'll be looking again very closely to Ukraine, but also the economy. If it's deemed that actually the response by the world, the US, et cetera, is not necessarily going to be extreme and ruin their economy, as some people are saying, then it might be worth, you know, doing something. And I'm not saying that's a full invasion, but it might be scalable. But that's where you've got to look at everything. So, you know, you mentioned earlier about some of the limitations. You know, their carrier operations are still pretty adversely to be fair. Their aversion to night flying, you know, their close air support, which they've never really done in great detail from the air. Their sort of long range logistics is always an issue as well. And overall sustainability, because China is a very big place and they've got other things to worry about as well. So, you know, we'd start to see, I think, a lot more moving towards that theatre, which would hopefully give us a good understanding of if something is serious as imminent.
Intent is changing. So, Akhil, just going back to yourself, in terms of what you have seen and the change that has been that you've described, is there a sense that there is more yet to be done, that the Chinese have got a lot more yet to do, and that they've got the capability maybe elsewhere in China, but they haven't brought it to bear yet? Is there anything else out there that we haven't seen yet that might give us a sense that, okay, they are done, they are ready? If they need to go capability-wise, check them off.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, we don't have an idea yet about the fifth generation aircraft. At some point, if Taiwan starts to actually disclose that they have been tracking J-20 fifth gen or the J-35, then we'll have we'll know that, you know, China is being rather serious about how it operates over the ATIS. But at the moment, they're still, you know, let's not even talk about the fifth gen. We can talk about other capabilities like, you know, 4.5 J-16s. For example, we're not really seeing any sort of PLAF kind of interaction with amphibious forces yet. Yeah, we haven't really seen that. There was an instance back in August 2024 when the PLA Army, the ground force, decided that it's going to use commercial ships, commercial tankers, to kind of use them as air bases in the center of the Taiwan Strait to kind of support helicopters, attack helicopters, transport helicopters, reconnaissance helicopters, so they could operate closer to Taiwan. We did see that, but there's no real coordination yet between the Air Force and the Army about how it's going to support amphibious forces when they're attacking. Taiwan. And you know, it's no easy thing to kind of really attack, conduct an amphibious operation, right? I made a note here. At its shortest length, the distance between mainland China and Taiwan is 79 miles, 127 kilometers. At its longest, it's 110 miles, 180 kilometers. You know, distance during the Battle of Britain, the distance between shortest between England and France was 26 miles, right? And Hitler could not conduct a cross-channel invasion because of air power, British air power. And yeah. China will need to wipe out Taiwanese air power in order to conduct an amphibious assault. And it's not going to be easy for them to do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It certainly sounds like there's a few more things left on the to-do list for the PLA. Oh, he was completely ready. Certainly amphibious force support, I'm sure, would be a major, major undertaking. Yeah. One for sure. All right, let me then start to bring this conversation from now to a close. And what I'll do, Akhil, in a second, is I'll ask you just to give me one takeaway for the audience that you really want them to remember from all the work that you've done, that they can take away as a sort of a conclusion, a summary. Sean, for you and I think what this conversation does, it adds another layer, doesn't it, to the Taiwanese-China discussions we've had. We've talked about the geopolitical, we've talked about the indicators and warnings, and now we've got some tangible evidence that their capability element of the algorithm, the threat algorithm, is being strengthened. We should come back to this again. One of the things I would ask, Akhil, before I come to the question about what's the one takeaway, is that you keep us informed of how this is developing, because I think if we could bring together yourself with Zavi from the sort of geopolitical country intelligence with what we're seeing on the actual activity front, it would make a very compelling discussion in terms of what all these things mixing up to look like in Sean's frequently articulated risk algorithm. So we'll come back to that for sure. And thank you in advance for saying yes when we invite you back for the next edition. But to come back to the question, if you had the chance to speak to the audience and give them one takeaway from this whole situation, what would it be?
China is going to continue to escalate its activities. It's going to use more and more new aircraft that are introduced into service to test them operationally. It's going to use it to not only build up its operational expertise, but to intimidate China. It'll increase gray zone activities, which we don't really cover in detail in the news, but I must mention that, you know, we've seen 156 balloons China sent over Taiwan over the last, since start of 2024. These balloons, as far as I know, have no real military value. They're supposed to tie up Taiwanese resources into tracking them. That's what they want. This is going to continue as long as China feels that Taiwan is headed down a separatist or independence path. It's going to continue. Yeah. Will it result in a flashpoint? I don't think so. There have been times when China's crossed into Taiwanese airspace, but nothing has really happened. They haven't gone the full distance. And I feel that China is, to a degree, cautious about how it behaves in the ADIS. They are very cautious because they don't want to create a military situation that they're not prepared to handle. Because Japan has expressed support for Taiwan. Of course, you have the United States also that could step in.
Yeah.
But the escalation will continue for a long time.
Escalation will continue. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what about yourself?
No, I agree with that. And I think that what it does show is that China is deadly serious about modernizing its military.
Yeah.
It said it's putting a lot of money in there, and it's doing it in an operational context which makes sense.
Yes.
So I think from that perspective, but it is still, you know, however antagonistic it is, and I agree with Akhil, it is measured, it's calibrated. It's still only one element that we need to see of many elements, which we have talked about before, in terms of us deciding that actually something is going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think the only thing I would add to both of your good points then is going back to the tradecraft, the value of watching something over a long period of time means you can spot the trends and the abnormal, the unusual. And that's what you described right at the beginning there, that we had a 50% increase in activity compared to the pattern of life we've seen previously. That, for me, is the underscoring in black ink, the importance of long-term expert observation of things to really be able to identify the unusual or the abnormal. Akhil, thank you so much for joining us on an important topic. We will invite you back to discuss this again. I know that Taiwan's going to be on the agenda for us as a new news item, certainly for a long time to come. And we'll get you back as soon as we can. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on, gents.
Pleasure. And for our audience, thank you for listening. As ever, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to let us know directly. And any questions or comments you might have for Akhil, come through us and we'll get them to him. For the audience, we will be covering Taiwan again in the future. But if there are other topics you'd like us to cover as well, also let us know that. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us this week on The World of Intelligence. Make sure to visit our website, janes.com/podcast, where you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, so you'll never miss an episode.